The sound of the putorino, an intricately carved flute belonging to a collection of Maori instruments known as the taungapuro, or singing treasures. Richard Nuns was just 15 when he first saw a photograph of these instruments in an article in the Auckland Weekly News.
The tenor of the article was these beautiful, finely carved, ancient objects are in the Auckland Museum. It is said they are musical instruments, but nobody knows anything about them. In some cases, we're not even sure they're musical instruments.
Little did he know that 50 years on, he would be breathing life into the instruments once again. He did so with the help of carver Brian Flintoff and the late Dr. Hirini Melbourne, a Maori composer who'd also been captivated by the instruments. Brian Flintoff remembers his reaction.
He went into the Auckland Museum and was looking at one of the showcases there and saw this beautiful putorino flute, which is a long flute about half a metre long. And he mused to himself, "I wonder what sounds this instrument made. I wonder who played it."
A question Brian was already putting to the test. He had carved an exact replica of a Maori flute known as a kowowo.
Copying the shape of it was one thing, but not being a musician, getting it to sound was another thing. In fact, I've got the record of taking about 2 years to get a sound from the instrument. And fortunately for me, I met Richard Nuns, and Richard was a jazz flute player.
Every time Brian made an instrument, he would ask Richard to test it out. Soon, it was not just a question of whether or not it made a sound, but was that sound authentic? Did the new flute sound like the original human bone flutes collected by Captain Cook? Brian took a flute he'd carved from emu bone all the way to Cambridge University in England to find out.
They brought out the instruments they had, which had been collected by Captain Cook, and asked me to play them. So I played the human bone one and then pulled out the emu one to play straight after to see if I was in fact creating the sound that I hoped. And it was a great thrill to me to find that the emu bone sounded very similar to that human bone.
Brian and Richard then set out to take a selection of old and new instruments back to the Maori communities from which they'd originally come. The first meeting was at Aroroa, in the northernmost tip of the North Island. Richard was apprehensive about how they would be received.
Brian and I are New Zealand Europeans, and here we are bringing Maori, very specific, sacred and lost traditions back to the people.
They had with them a highly prized and sacred human bone flute.
When some of the locals, especially some of the older women, saw this human bone one, they were completely uncomfortable with it. I was sitting in the back with the audience and thought, oh, this is not looking very good. But then as Richard played this human bone flute, I could see their faces lighten, and then they whispered to each other, and then very shortly they were singing along with the song of the human flute and were completely delighted and overwhelmed that they'd heard the sound that they never thought they'd hear again.
As they moved around the country, each community was similarly moved by the sounds of the past.
We were being approached by particularly elderly women, kuia, at the end of any session, who would be crying with excitement or sadness and beholding you and stroking you and saying, oh, I remember those sounds.
Finding out what the instruments were used for proved more difficult.
We found we'd get virtually no response to questions, no response to interviews, really. They basically claimed they knew nothing. The old ones remembered nothing, knew nothing, had seen nothing. And, of course, that would be right because the instruments fell away throughout the 19th century and were collected and gathered and taken away overseas by and large. A few were hidden and many were broken.
Little by little, it emerged they had disappeared soon after the missionaries arrived in New Zealand. It's thought their use in spiritual practices conflicted with the new religion.
We find them being played in ritual and ceremonial situations. I keep repeating this crass metaphor as a cell phone to the divine. They were what dialed up the deity, as it were.
They were played by the tohunga, a sacred person endowed with spiritual power.
He was a very important person who was kept separate from the society and couldn't be fed normal food, was fed through a special feeding tube. He was so sacred.
These people were set aside to divine, to make matters of prophecy, to generally advise and guide the community.
Many of the instruments had a functional as well as a spiritual use.
What you hear now is the purerehua. Purerehua in days of old was used to beckon rain.
Dion Pater is Māori Collections Manager at Te Papa, the Museum of New Zealand. He and his colleagues are some of the first Māoris to use the instruments in their traditional sense.
It normally produces this reaction, which we call kamau te wehi, which you would refer to as sort of like the standing of hairs on your back. So once you've made that connection, you know that you've got a clear line to the deities, and so that's why we usually we get quite emotional when we're playing the taonga pōro, because that to us means that our ancestors are present.
The pūmotomoto is a rare flute used by one tribe to inform its children of their ancestral lineage.
The instrument is played during pregnancy and while the child is young over the fontanelle until the fontanelle closes over. And so the chanting and the stories and the histories and the genealogy were all sent through the instrument directly into the brain of the child. And bringing this instrument back to life has been one of the most exciting things that I've ever done.
Each instrument is ornately carved with stories telling of its origin in Māori mythology. The shell trumpet's spirit was discovered by a tribe of fishermen in the North Island.
When they were fishing, they could hear this crying, this weeping, and this went on for quite some time, until one day, clinging to the anchor rope itself, was the ancestor of the shell, and she was weeping and crying, and they were so touched by this voice that they heard and so moved by her anguish that they called her Hine Mokimoki, and Mokimoki is a sadness, a longing, a yearning.
The melancholy sounds of these instruments have attracted musicians from across all genres. Tim Gummer from Rattle Records was the first to record them.
We instantly decided that it should be recorded and offered to record the music, and they were excited by that, and we got involved recording an album, which we didn't really have any particular expectancy about in terms of who it would reach. We really had no idea. We just thought we should record this music. We recorded what became Te Kū Te Whai, which was ultimately became like a defining album of taonga pōro, and it sells as many today as it did 15 years ago. It's quite amazing.
Another new work featuring the taonga pōro played by Richard Nuns is an electronica album composed by Paddy Free from Pitch Black.
The idea was to make an album honouring nature and using the electronics to support the taonga. These instruments, because they come from nature, they're so completely reflective of nature. They capture the sense I get in nature, a feeling of wonderful insignificance, of it is big and you are small, and I absolutely love that. It's hard to pick a favourite, really. They all evoke different emotions. The pupuharakeke, which is a flax snail, which is quite a large native New Zealand snail, its shell can be gently blown across the top, and that's just got the most delicate, delicate sound. And in the hands of a master like Richard Nuns, it can just bring tears to my eyes. Richard can produce sounds out of anything. A rock with a hole in it, he'll walk along the beach and pick up something, and there's music coming out of it.
These instruments give you so little, and you have to provide so much from within yourself. You have to actually dredge it from the earth itself, and you have to find and search for the music in a way that you've never had to do before, and somehow transmute it so that it activates the vessel that makes it sing with its own individual personal voice.
Voices that have attracted New Zealand's leading classical composer Gillian Whitehead. Her latest composition is called Puhaka Kitarangi, a piece about whales played with whalebone instruments.
I just think they're wonderful, mysterious creatures, and I listened a lot to recordings of whale sound, and it's the range of their song. I mean, they have these very deep, sonorous notes, and it was a wish to just experiment with sound in a different way. no instrument will have been made from a whale that's been harmed in any way. They are all from whales who've beached in the central part of New Zealand.
The whales are the oldest children of the sea god Tangaroa and are very special. Their stranding is acknowledged as being a gift from the sea god. So removing the bones from the whale and making special things from them is a huge honour that is not lightly bestowed by Māori.
One of the instruments is made of the cochlea of a whale, so what the whale used to receive sound is now being made a way of sending the sound back into the world again, which I found fascinating. The Tangapuro do have very small ranges, maybe the range of a minor third or perhaps a fourth, but they also have the ability to slide between pitches and use microtones.
Gillian devises shape of the piece, writes for those who need to read. I'm left with creative holes, as it were, in which I improvise. Essentially, it becomes a collaborative activity that is to a degree different every night that it's played and performed.
At the first performance of the work in Wellington, the audience are clearly moved by this unique work.
I just think the beautiful bone playing and the strings and things just melted beautifully into each other. I could hear water and I could just see the whales sort of talking. That's a really stunning piece, I think.
Ah, dear, I'm very moved indeed to think that we have only a couple of hundred years of history caught in a piece like that, and for Richard Nuns to be bringing Pākehā man, Māori music instruments, to sing as old whales is a very moving experience.